interrupting the current neo-colonial, climate-changed, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM567. Remember, being free is not a spectator sport, folks. You just got to get involved. At least for yourself. At least for your families. You have to understand what there is to do. You have to do that with an objective basis. And it's getting very, very difficult. Been involved with over the last few months or so with courts. And we were talking about that reflexive law. Yeah. Shifting sands. They are putting that in spades right now. And it's going to be very difficult. As I have been saying for a long time, prepare for your appeals if you go that direction. Otherwise, the answer seems to be, don't get involved that way. Stop it in the administrative side. And we can hear behind the woodshed how we do that all the time. That's how the Kobe swindle would have been stopped. We don't get into the courts at all. And because I could see, well, they were telling us, but I could see that how it was shifting. It's not, there is no law. It's whatever that guy in a black robe, a bar member, just a fraternal organization, the brotherhood, it says it is. And I am just almost shocked how blatant they are now. You see, a statute says exactly what the legislature wants to have done, and they'll deny it's there. It's really quite amazing. And that's where they're taking us, and there's not going to be much we can do about it unless until we start stepping up and arguing vociferously, at least amongst ourselves, to straighten out how we're going to go about taking that out, getting rid of it. The only way to I can figure out is the objective basis, so blatant, and then the voices coming that are standing on the solid foundation. As I said, black and white, they're denying it because they still have the appeal review in their own brotherhood. It's quite amazing how they've set this up for us. But as we move into the first story here, you'll know you're not on shifting sands of time here when you have a break, have to break ground. Maybe scientists discover evidence of lost continent off Australia's coast. Pretty interesting what they come up with all these stories recently, I'm noticing. Scientists have unearthed evidence of a lost continent beneath the Timor Sea off Australia's north coast in a groundbreaking discovery. Unearthed while under the ocean. Such a miracle, this science, folks. This submerged landmass, known as the Northwest Shelf, is a staggering 1.6 times larger than the UK and has once a thriving hub of human activity, home of an estimated 50,000 to 500,000 people around 70,000 years ago. This continent featured a diverse landscape of archipelago, lakes, rivers, and even a vast inland sea. The study, published by the Journal of Quaternary Science, reveals how the Northwest Shelf played a pivotal role in human migration from Indonesia to Australia as a crucial connecting landmass. However, in the end of the last ice age around 18,000 years ago, brought a warming phase that drastically raised sea levels, ultimately submerging the shelf about 300 feet underwater. As the rising sea claimed the shelf, it forced inhabitants to migrate to the Australian mainland, particularly to the Kimberley and Arnhem regions. Greta, 18,000 years ago, sea rise without Michael Mann made global warming. Greta, pay attention here. Where did all that water come from, though, anyway, as well, folks? Over 300 feet, not 3 millimeters last year, 300 feet came in. And if those cherry-picked records are correct, because anyone looking at sea levels around the world, you'll see some go up and some go down, no different than some places get hotter and other places at the same time get cooler, with precipitation or drought. It's all balanced, it seems. It's a pretty neat system. But we take a step back even further, looking through our mind's eye to the ice age, given it's only an age. How much water was stored over there on the 25% of the landmass that was that's available, for how long to encourage habitation at those levels of lowered sea levels? Put your mind in there and start working the reality out here. And how salty were those oceans before the lack of unfrozen water would have, you know, caused the melting and such? How concentrated was that? I mean, we're looking at 300 feet below, a lot of water gone away. That's going to be salting the ocean even worse. And then we have the apparent, apparently we still had polar bears, right? If the mammoth wasn't tough enough to avoid being destined to be condemned to being fossil fuel from dem bones, not exalted for their sacrifice from the current professed pantheist here. Said another way, how much money would WEF, Klaus Schwab, Greta, President Biden, Climate Czar Kerry, the EPA, and other sustainability crazies demand to stop the inevitable sea rise then? Again, 300 feet happens, not 3 millimeters, that they're all got their panties in a wad. And would those trillions have stopped the sea level rise when Gaia insisted she's not actually the Messiah for the green religion or the Vatican and saved the mammoth or dem bones? I suppose these fraudsters believe level rise has no end as well, despite we still have rainbows. No, the political type of rainbows notwithstanding. I think George Carlin is correct. Carlin is correct here. I think Gaia wanted plastic and invented man. I know, sacrilege. But just stick with me. And involved man to provide plastic, turtles aside, and no amount of money or religion to the contrary would deter her will. That's nature now. Neither the trillions of bucks the primitive people did not put themselves through austerity to not achieve being infinitely more intelligent than people today. They merely migrated as needed, and as people may do here coming, as it gets cold northern, as those projections are still on target, if you haven't noticed. And and on that note about the migration, even if the sea level rises, the IPCC's 45-degree slope model projection as fraudulently as Michael Mann's hockey stick, but even so, by their own measure, maybe your coastal property is a bad investment. And the better answer is to move to a place 4 feet higher and let the elite sustainability promoters that seem to love to buy property on the coast suffer their 2-foot fate to their million-dollar mansion seaside estate. And though the people in Fukushima know 4 feet sea level rise is no big thing. In other words, don't panic. Nature is organic. Greta. And something certainly not organic any longer. This week, interesting stuff, we can peer into breaking notice to see the overthrow of the founding fathers' era. I'm right here before you. I talk about it all the time. I talk about the change and the shift. And I've advocated don't fight it. Understand that's what you're in. That's the state. It's a condition that you're in. Wherever. The U.S. Supreme Court rules Trump can't be kicked off ballots. The ruling was unanimous with no written dissent published. However, two different concurrences were filed. And so we want to read some of those and see how this lays out, just to see who these people are in these offices. But why was this a question? Why judges being determiners of what the law requires, did a state Supreme Court not determine a case from the law that it had no jurisdiction over, then embarrassingly had an opinion on the matter, not before it, is our problem here in this country. We're talking about jurisdictional challenges all the time. The state court has no jurisdiction, no matter how supreme the Colorado courts seem or ought to be, ought to have determined such immediately, if not sooner. You know, the very first duty of the court is to identify that it has jurisdiction. And throughout the case, it never goes away, the duty to notice and observe that it has continuing jurisdiction. And as soon as that goes away, they're supposed to end the discussion right there. And what was the 14th Amendment here, if we look in the history? Well, why I'm suggesting this is what we're seeing the post-Founding Father era being exposed to us, you got to put on your thinking hats here for if you never thought about this, or incorrectly so, the court mentions the center of a more perfect power in this decision. It's very interesting. We go through it. We'll go through a lot. I just want to point out some things that maybe will excite you a bit to watch how this thing works out, what they are saying, what they're not saying, but how it's actually working. Quote, because the Constitution makes Congress rather than the states responsible for enforcing Section 3 against federal officeholders and candidates, we reverse the lower court, allowing Trump's name to be pulled off a ballot. Quote, only Congress can enforce the insurrection clause against presidential candidates. Start thinking this through, folks, how this is all going to work. And you almost saw what happened up pretty quickly. So Congress steps up in here, or at least they're going to do some things that don't like Trump. But going on here, we want to see what's the state we live in. No, not the states of the union. The condition we're living under. And they explain it here through this case. Among those retained powers is the power of the state to, quote, order the processes of its own governance. Following that? This leaves to the states only so much power directly over their governance of the described territory. Just as it is left to the Britannic Majesty's governance, you listen in cooking to Kyrgyzstan and Australia and the rest here, folks, listen carefully how this works out. Almost identical. It just has different faces on it. But people need to read this decision. I believe it can be fairly far-reaching here, for at least our understanding. It can also be an assertion here, but what did Lincoln here actually do when we read between the lines of this case and adding context and historical similarities? Let us toss into this 1860s federal word salad bowl. Similarly, section 1981 of the United States Code, Title 42, Equal Rights Under the Law. Remember, this is municipal law running over as a blanket over the whole nation. And I quote, shall be subject to like punishments, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and exactions of every kind and to no other. So that's a municipal law. Congress is pushing on to the rest of the states, a wet blanket, no doubt, subject to congressional power that we now hear, not states. So by this, can my listener observe that in the post-founding father era, there is no constitutional rights, at least not any that Congress hasn't dictated away by equal rights under law, known as civil rights. The guarantee clause that y'all shall be subject to like punishment, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and exactions of every kind, and to no other. Those subject to the presumptive Lincolnized, more perfect union are enslaved by this clause. You need to go read it. You'll see it states white citizens, and this was written for the freed blacks. Let's look very carefully at what they did there. This is really an astonishing finding I found years and years and years ago. But the plot twist, the Supreme Court order explains it with a little left to read between the lines You don't listen, but not closely enough to the guy behind the woodshed. You read down around page 4 or so. Per curiam, did we now reverse? We move on to now the rationale proposed, or the explanation as they lead into this. Proposed by Congress in 1866 and ratified by the states in 1868, the 14th Amendment, quote, expanded federal power at the expense of state autonomy, and thus, quote, fundamentally altered the balance of power and federal power struck by the Constitution. The 14th Amendment grants new power to Congress to enforce the provisions of the amendment against the states. Parenthetically, states have no power to retard, impede, burden, or in any manner control the operations of constitutional laws enacted by Congress. So understand the constitutional laws is your end if you can find or get them to say that whatever the law was unconstitutional. That usually doesn't happen too much. So given the presumptions of benefits of the law to an enslaved people under the municipal law at 1981, so-called here, again, this is a municipal law in D.C. that's a blanket over the top of the country. What we read is a civilly conceded military administration, as we read in the Texas documents, as I've been pointing this out and showing you how the South was picked up and turned over, essentially, into the perfect union that was actually underneath this wet blanket over the, of the central authority, the feds. Again, the states reduced to just their own governance. Picking and choosing who the leaders are means nothing compared to the authority and the power. And I told you the word power here is all important. This doesn't undermine everything, but for our consideration here today, we can understand even clearer, if you will, reading through the Supreme Court, what they're saying, how they're interpreting it is how they're going to interpret it. You better pick up on this and understand the condition that you're in under. But so who is the subject to all this? Because you look in the title of 42 of 1981, it said those the person subject to the United States. And the answer to the question is the occupying forces determine that was held as a presumption there. It's imposed unless rebutted, these presumptions of being subject. But let us say by an obligation and duty of Congress, it can't avoid, such as its land grants, most of which exist prior to 1868, the time of the ratification of the 14th Amendment by the states. So it can dictate your rights, except those that it can't. And that's why I say they said the constitutional power. And this is why I keep focusing on the power, the grants of the land, the disposal, exclusively to those that they can show the evidence of, which is that patent to start with. And you're not necessarily the one who received the patent, but you may be an heir or an assigned to a patent, and it says forever. And I just ran across some people who found a nice little sample of one of those. It was like a mythical creature until they saw it. And it's a nice little, nice, simple, little, well-written, nicely written. You can read everything on the document. And I was able to point out here, this is how this authority goes to work through. This is the evidence of what's going on. It made a whole big difference on how people were interpreting or could interpret what I've been saying all this time. So when I suggest go get some things, you need them study aids, do it, because I was a little revealing to me that even though I say things, people don't necessarily follow through. When they did, it was like night and day understanding. But to hear international law, when you look at the district, the federal district, the wet blanket over all the states, that's recognized under international law relative to a military and occupation, and that provides you the provision of you know them when you see them here, as I've been talking as well, just like the open-air Palestinians are trying to do the same type of model of organized criminal that they're fighting, as I keep referencing the United States American people the same way. It just doesn't look like it. But when you lay out the authorities and where the power is, you can come up with your own idea. That's what I've come up with on how this works out. And when I did, it just made things a lot more easy to understand. And I had to, if you will, concede we live in an occupied territory. Once I did, that freed up a whole lot of things. That freed up my mind. I could start looking at things the way they really maybe are, not necessarily even the way they want to be, but we can start looking a little bit clearer. And unless you violate international law by allowing the occupied people in the land to get restless enough to throw the occupiers out, they know that, and they ain't talking about this, and they're not going to give us these answers that were written right there if you just start looking between the lines, as I said, and let alone admit to what they're doing. This is that's a forbidden concept in international law for an occupied territory. And you're watching that play out perfectly right now with the Zionist Federation in the Palestine. Yeah, that's all. This is kind of like that. It just all seems to work the same way. So, folks, Trump, 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 Trump. Yeah, instead of what's important. And this is what I'm dismayed to watch what's going on in this country. There's so much more important things to be focused on. And the people that move into the power are always going to be subject to the existing system, which appears to be nothing more than a military occupation over the entire land. And the trick is, you know they're successful when you don't see the military occupation. Israel's not too successful. But the Zionists in Israel beating down and trying to take away the territory of Palestine is not too subtle. But they're doing a good job here. I don't think anybody talks about this stuff. Can't point certain things out like I've done. And all I'm doing there is I'm trying to get people reoriented to what it looks like everything by the black and white, not my opinion, says, so that we can move clearly. This was a very interesting story. This decision, very interesting. They even had some infighting inside. Well, we agree. Every one of us agrees, but how you done it was a little bit off. It's pretty interesting to watch as we hear the one that caught my eye. The Supreme Court isn't necessarily about law and justice as I was interpreting this, but keeping the occupied natives at a low simmer as they claw at each other in the pot. But we read, Barrett joins liberal justices on Trump ballot ban, ruling going too far. Conservative Justice Amy Coney Barrett and the court's three liberals criticized their five conservative law colleagues for going further than they needed to in resolving Trump's case by also determining that the only way the 14th Amendment to be enforced is through the statute by Congress. Listen to that very carefully. It's not just that Congress does it, but they have to have a law to do the enforcement. And you hear a little bit of reflection on that. Some of these people that hate Trump started to move on that real quickly. Find it. They didn't know the law well enough to do it before, but it's okay. We're all a bunch of people with rings in our nose, and we get drugged wherever we are. Those are our representatives as well. They're just representing exactly our ignorance and our lack of awareness of what's going on, what's going on. And here we'll do a quote out of this article. The majority's choice, she says, of a different path leaves remaining justices with a choice of how to respond, Barrett continued. The court has settled a politically charged issue in the volatile season of the presidential election. Particularly this circumstance, writings on the court should turn the national temperature down, not up. And there you have it, international law. Don't determine what is just in law. We must mind the political thermostat, lest the natives and the post-founding father era get too heated and restless and alter or abolish our occupying pretenses. That's what she said there, folks. In so many words. They're not going to admit to this stuff. You have to have enough read, as I tell you, to go read. Find the stuff and read it, and then think about it for yourself. Come to your own awareness on your foundation. Not because I suggest it. You can peer right through what they're doing here. You have to start, again, qualifying the international law. It's there and pervasive. What more is there to say here? They have their hand on the political thermostat. It's not about law and justice. The Supreme Court no longer follows constitutional requirements, but international law regarding belligerent occupations, the same international law the court stated in Kansas versus Colorado in 1907, as I've referred to numerous times, quote, international law is no alien in this tribunal. International law is part of our law and must be ascertained and administered by the courts of justice of appropriate jurisdiction as often as questions of right depending upon it are duly presented for their determination. I'll remind you, Kansas versus Colorado, this is the state among states, and they state in this case that these are under international law, even domestic international law. It's international law applied, and these states are not, they don't use the word abroad. They are in an international, they're surrounded by oceans. You look very carefully in this case, but going on here, sitting, as it were, as an international as well as domestic tribunal, we apply federal law, state law, and international law as the exigencies of the particular case may demand. Remember, exigencies are the requirement of police power. Don't underestimate some of these words. They're very compact, but here we go. It also states force. In that case, it says force under our system is eliminated. Now, certainly the courts have heard of the Civil War, don't you think? If force was eliminated. No? Okay. Or is this another admission, as we read the post-founding father era, courts is where the Civil War continues against the people themselves in judicial districts. These are military-administered judicial districts. No states. As we read in the post-Civil War South, particularly the Texas documents regarding the allegiance to federal authority. So the duty of an international law respecting Supreme Court is to keep the political heat down so as not to rile the Americans in their transparent open-air prison. This statement's a fascinating admission by Barrett. don't you think? I mean, I thought, I looked at that. This is a big deal. And yet you're going to have to feel that big deal, because they're not going to tell you how big that is. And I can only say that once you've read enough material and documents, the good, you know, original documents, don't be making this stuff up. You can't almost come. I've been looking to see, how do you come to a different view? I almost can't. I haven't been able to find a way through it yet. Not that I'm not looking. Quote, the court should turn the national temperature down, not up. Now, where is that duty in the organic establishment? The Constitution, the organic one. Nowhere. Not after that. There's not the duty there. But it is a principle adhered to by wise forces belligerently occupying a land and its people. Thank you, belligerent occupier collaborator Barrett, for the reminder. That's all I had to say when I saw that. But sometimes we read here something more mainstream government media that, all things considered, is correct, which I want to pass on here. Very interesting, and I guess this is an opinion of mine, and this has come from some experience. Maybe I'll get through that once I get to the starting of this article. But Super Tuesday has come and gone, but this still simmers. And this is the warning that was given right before the election to Texas. Again, most people are ignorant of the state of things. Not their state, the state of things. Same word, means a condition. Texans warned about practical challenges of secession ahead of Super Tuesday. As Super Tuesday nears, Texan voters have been cautioned against casting their ballots for growing number of pro-secession candidates. The Dallas Morning News ran a story on March 2nd, Texas Independence Day, warning that many candidates for the Lone Star State House of Representatives and other offices have signed the, quote, Take Texas Back pledge. The pledge requires the candidates to, quote, vow their commitment to a contract with Texans, promising to vote and act solely in the best interest of Texans if they are elected. Those who sign it also promise to legislate for a referendum for Texan independence. Interjection. Did anybody read the law down there? Anybody? What is it for Texans? What is it when you get right down to it? Notwithstanding what I've seen, let's go read here some more. Those who refuse will be met with a clear and uncompromising warning. That'll get them, folks. We will actively recruit, train, and support opponents who embody true Texans' first values while exposing the voting records of those who contradict these values, the state's the pledge. These are absolutely toothless. This is part of what galls me a lot about what I see and what I've seen over a decade and a half of working with people trying to get stuff through in governments. On top of this truth about what they're warning, which is used as a ploy as well, and this is the other thing, I can see this as a ploy, but this is a truth as well. This truth of the failure I've found to be here universal, almost a complete ignorance of the past, the present, and because of those absences, where the people are going. These people think they have good ideas. We read here from the story, the Dallas Morning News editorial said over 150 people have already signed the pledge, including a host of GOP candidates in North Texas. Signatories to the pledge are not, quote, thinking far ahead about the real-life consequences of their statements, said the newspaper, stressing that the movement's website, quote, does not identify how an independent Texas would be funded in absence of federal money that currently comprises about 30% of our state's budget. Quote, the practical challenges to establishing an independent nation are sizable and cannot be patched over with extreme rhetoric, concluded the op-ed. This wasn't really the paper, although the editors would have allowed it. But this is absolutely the truth. Working with people shows complete ignorance when questioned about these incongruities, about the inadequacies between what they know and what is needed to be known before a plan of action can be made, let alone executed. Forget about the money and the time those suggesting these monumental endeavors, but they dismiss having to answer to the details, and they resort to generalities and of being insulted here, like this guy in the story. It's interesting how these all play out the same way. Daniel Miller, who set up the Texas Nationalist Movement in 2005. Look how long that's been going now, and they're just now making noise. This is what I'm suggesting to you. Try to reinvent the wheel or get someone to, it's a whole lot different thing that people don't quite get. They hit back, he hits back, but the paper's warning was, quote, neglects a core issue. Quote, the editorial alarm over the financial implications of Texas independence similarly betrays a lack of faith, not just in Texas's robust economy, but in the very spirit of Texan innovation and resilience. Can I say those two words again? Innovation and resilience. Put your thinking hats on. Who wears the source of this stuff? Miller said in the press release, quote, the Lone Star State is not merely a participant in the federal system out of financial necessity, but has thrived and contributed significantly to the Union's prosperity. The suggestion that Texas could not navigate the complexities of independence is not only baseless, but underestimates the talent, resourcefulness, and determination of Texas. Now, one of many core concerns here, the financial implications of Texas independence, relying on Texas's robust economy and Texan innovation and resilience, and thriving, does he plan to steal the economy and private production from the people to pay for all this? Notice all the sustainability language in this, as I've been highlighting it. Because aside that, faith and spirit won't pay the bills unless resorting to the federal full faith and debt model and the continuing spirit in the people to allow fraud and exactions of every kind will not finance a new state like it does the federal occupier Texans claim to be escaping from. Is someone messing with Texas? Is my thought on this. Again, what's the adage? If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Was that Benjamin Franklin? Well, I have to concur in this point. Again, it's just, there's not a response and a plan on how to do what he's done. It's just a saying, oh, it's violating our core values, and we go to spirit and faith. That's not going to necessarily pull off anything. This thing in the Texas appears to be a long-running waste of time psyop that as I looked at this, that even if well-intended, proceeds in ignorance, even cluelessness on this. It is a lot of this sort of stuff. There's a lot of this sort of stuff running through the Republican Party or conservatives, so-called, you know, which can be shown to be steered by subverters, intentionally or not, through ignorance. You know, my colleagues and I see this all the time. It's one of the major problems. Good-natured people just don't quite get what really has to happen. And it's really been quite disappointing to watch it. And this is, again, I don't know how many of these groups come together trying to figure things out. And just, you look at what they're doing and you just add a couple common sense questions and they don't have a clue. They've never really read the documents. They don't understand how to make it work. And yet they're trying to reinvent the wheel. And that's understandable for someone that's, you know, being crushed. You just want to get out. But it's not necessarily the right thing to do. And that's what I've been cautioning. We need to be a lot more understanding of the condition, the state that we're in, before we start to think about what action we're going to take. And there's a lot involved in all that. He wants to bring up the first thing he brings up was finances. Yeah, that's one of the big ones. But it's not the only one. But again, our minds are tainted with sustainability. Even if we're not, if we will outwardly say, yeah, we don't want sustainability, our language is full of it. Yeah, and it's full of it too. That's why I told you language in law and land disposal is critical to get and confine your language to that, because it's different than anything else that they can bring against you. But paying bills, talking about bankruptcy, remember they were talking about the federal debt, the fiat system. Master not a debtor be, as I've said. How about the fiat ruling class? How's that going for you? As we see, the West could collapse, says a Latin American leader. The U.S. dollar is backed by nothing, and its fall will drag down the rest of the world, El Salvador's Nayib Bukele has declared. The United States economy is based on the farce of printing unlimited amounts of money, and Western civilization will collapse when that bubble inevitably bursts, Salvadorian President Nayib Bukele warned American conservatives on Thursday. Conservatives, he said, always tell me that the problem is high taxes, but they are wrong. The real problem is that you pay high taxes only to uphold the illusion that you are funding the government, which you are not. He claimed before, describing how the government is financed by treasury bonds, which are purchased by the Federal Reserve with printed money backed by the bonds themselves. Hold yourself up by your own petards, I guess, or lift yourself up by your bootstraps, I guess, here, right? The government is funded by money printing paper backed by paper, a bubble that will inevitably burst, he said, adding that the situation is even worse than it seems, because if most Americans and the rest of the world were to become aware of this farce, confidence in your currency would be lost. The dollar will fall in Western civilization with it. The people of El Salvador have woken up, and so can you, he told the crowd of CPAC, pointing to rising crime and drug use in the streets of America's cities. He called on conservatives to, quote, put up a fight because in the end it will be worth it. You will have your country back. Anything else to explain there? This is not even new news, but we have a foreigner looking in and seeing it as well. Any one of us who looked at this could figure this out. This has been going on for decades and decades, not just since the Kobe swindle. It's not just since the 9/11. All the things needing done can be accomplished by an informed, intelligent people coming together to protect themselves, and political party affiliation is irrelevant. And this is, transcends everything. The states who have the power to coin gold and silver money, create state or local banks, or by putting production first, protecting it and the underlying property rights, and working to sever all federal attachments without any wholesale rewrite of the governments, overthrown or secession. Secession is popular right now, but it's unnecessary. It's going to cause more trouble than it's worth. As I said, I think this is all a big psyop. When you start reading what needs to be done, it's much more simple than what's going on. And we, as the people, wherever we are, have to start cutting our linkages. If you don't, you're just talking to the wind, because the linkage, the contracts. If you go look at the 1981, 42 U.S.C. 1981, it talks about contracts will be enforced. Your grants are contracts. Your contracts for grant money, so-called funds, are contracts, and they will be enforced. If you don't have them, they can't be enforced. So most people have never, relative to making up these ideas on what we do, most people have never read their respective enabling acts, let alone know enough to advocate the creation of new states. They wouldn't know how to go about doing that. Actually, people think they do, but when you start talking about it, start asking questions, people don't have a clue. It's quite astonishing. I mean, the decades here, when you look into what it takes, actually it takes decades if you can get it done, the separation. So it makes more sense to me when we look at all this. You take what exists now and work it to your advantage. Don't waste time reinventing the wheel or fighting with those wanting to keep federal control. Again, start cutting the control. They can't really force it on you, actually, especially when you have a whole population watching. You can't feel like you're by yourself either. Just make the feds irrelevant, engaging in existing local alternatives. Like I said, the black and white, gold and silver minted coin is what a state can do. Why hasn't that been done? There's people who understand about local state banks. Why hasn't that been done? Is the problem, is what's going on. The people are just not unified. For themselves, forget the government, the governance, forget that. So I've been explaining all this for years. So I just found it interesting. This week was kind of neat to pull all this stuff out. And it will help immensely to get people into local government, if you want to go that way, to allow it to move more very quickly here. They will be more apt to move it forward. And if you think about it, every political party would be on board. Everyone in the political party they're in would be on board with something like this, because the alternative rearing its ugly head here is unacceptable. that brings a destruction to everything an American holds dear. For instance, as I lead with the production, and if my listener doesn't think so, look to see how U.S. federal policy is destroying Germany. So our country is no different than a different state, different country, the way it's being destroyed, and the way the federal attachments pull our energy away and impose obligations and duties. Supreme Court in the Trump case says the Congress can impose. It has a priority authority now. It fundamentally changed the character of this nation. What happened at the 14th Amendment, which was started by Lincoln and the Lincolnization of the United States of America. And we get back to why you have to protect. You have to protect your productive capacity. You're watching Russia. I told you, watch this. Russia's doing it. Their productive capacity, they have things that other people in the world want. That's going to prevail. The removal of the productive capacity, being starved like for energy with Germany, you watch as well, is going down without a peep, folks, all their people. While we hear lots of crickets who complain, but they're not doing much more. And you're watching a destruction of a nation to the benefit of some others, another nation. So there's no real reason for it, folks. None whatsoever. As I ask you, get you behind the woodshed while you still can hear. You, not the politicians or smooth-talking candidates, can do anything about this. And you, in fact, you are wasting time listening to them as we hear and going through an election cycle. Again, Trump, Trump, Trump. None of those folks are doing much of anything, actually. And as Naib Boukele says, you do this, you will have your country back. You have to understand what your country will be. You don't even really understand it's not what you think it is. You have to understand that and then understand what you want to do and what you want to pull together. And then what's the path? Once you see that, what's your pathway through? Relative to this, the collapse of the West is identified by a Salvadorian president looking in, and I think he nails it pretty well. He does hit the money right up front. It's fiat, it's no good, right? But as to the collapse of the West, Biden's State of the Union address would be and should have been, and no longer than this, "Good evening, my fellow Americans. It's rotting and it's stinking. God bless America. Now, how do I get off this stage?" And what does neocurrent voice of reason celebritude have to say about this? The State of the Union address, Tucker Carlson, Biden's address to Congress, most un-American speech ever. Quote, there is a lie after lie in this speech. Ukraine cannot stop Russia. No, it can't. Ukraine can't stop Russia. No, it can't. This has been going on for over 2 years. NATO is stronger than ever. No, it's not. It was crazy talk, Carlson said. State of the Onion, folks. Rotting. But latent in Carlson's opinion, Trump nor any other candidate is going to fix this in the coming future at all. Just like Trump didn't fix it the last time, the perception of less bad under Trump doesn't fix it. And note here, the perception under the great COVID swindle Trump initiated at warp speed evidenced mass blindness, not insight and wisdom. But less bad Trump did start the downfall at warp speed, initiating without lawful authority the Great Reset, opening the floodgates of the swamp issuing from the stinking abyss for the larger global plunder and genocide at the speed of organized crime, I mean science, be it military, economic, political, social, legal, etc. Remember that. Never forget that. There are many pathways to perdition these Pied Pipers can take. Whistle in the tune the child wants to hear. And that's what I see people responding to. But what does the recent and ostensibly come-of-age Carlson or the people think America is? And I'm not asking here what their opinion is. The fact of what has transpired in the post-Founding Father era because of Lincolnization of the United States War of Terror tyranny is what I'm asking about. Do they recognize this? Un-American? What's American? More smoke and mirrors to keep here the inhabitants from getting restless that America even exists more than a matrix-provided sweet dream Is that America? Is that what we're talking about? Is that what he's referring to? Or is it the nightmare ushered in by Operation Hindsight 2020, the great COVID swindle, furthering the farcical U.S. war on terror? As a title, that's not what it ends up being. It's not un-American to have a president evade reality. It is un-American under the theory of the consent of the governed for the people to continue to take it. And yet I don't hear anybody really explaining it. We just complain as people. And this is the current opinion of wisdom, I suppose. And yet nothing is really stated. Nothing new is really stated. Johnny Carlson come lately, I guess it is here. And from the not organic to the unnatural, wicked even, we almost got a flag out and cheered for this one, but this is the, she's going nowhere. It's going nowhere. It's not changing. This is the changing of the, moving from ship to ship, I suppose. Victoria Nuland quits. The deputy secretary will leave the U.S. State Department in several weeks, Antony Blinken has announced. And I say, good, like most people probably will. One corpulent rat jumped ship, and I say, Blinken, now it's your turn for your dereliction of duty, as well to Gonzalo Lira, American journalist, tortured, extorted of his money, and ultimately killed while you both watched, and aiding and abetting his murder, as I mentioned in 18 U.S.C. 3 and 4. I need to hear from you that you're going to resign. And I don't think what you think regarding, quote, her, Victoria Nuland's leadership on Ukraine will be the subject of study, he says, for years to come by diplomats and students of foreign policy. I don't think that's going to be, will be what you promote it to be when we look back as these students and diplomats are already identifying, saying on Ukraine admits to her unwarranted, undemocratic criminal interference as well. Just shameful what's been going on around her. And she helped in the planning and destruction of a democratically elected foreign government as a stepping stone to attack another country, the consequence of which has been to bring the world to the brink of nuclear destruction because of the ill-conceived plan to advance a global psychopathy, murder, and genocide for private global interests and the expense and disrespect of which to the embarrassment of the American people, as I can see it, for no good reason other than to advance a personal vendetta, an ideologically unsound agenda, and also done on Blinken's watch. So, Antony Blinken, your turn. Jump. Resign. Get off the ship of state. Quit causing trouble. All you folks need to go to a little rock outcropping in the South China Sea. And you want to keep looking here on the news and the notices we see about looking at about the global U.S. military industrial censorship Zio Media pogrom that supports the likes of ne'er-do-well Nuland. It's in the news as well the same week. U.S. censorship industrial complex alive and well. Well, I've been talking about all this and what's going on. You have a bunch of people that don't know what their world is about, the United States of America. They're Americans. They don't know about it because of this type of censorship, which is coming to the fore. It's always been working in us. We knew that from the media, the movies, and all that. But the United States online censorship industry complex, industrial complex, showed its fangs Monday when blogger Eve Smith was sent a threatening message from Google via his website ad service provider. Smith, who runs the popular blog Naked Capitalism, wrote about the ordeal in the post entitled "Google Demands That We Censor Our Content." Quote, "We noticed that Google had flagged your site for policy violation, and ad serving is restricted on most of the pages with the below strike. Read the email, which claimed the website had violated policies around violent extremism, hateful conduct, harmful health claims, and anti-vaccination content. Quote, I request you review the page content and fix the existing policy issues flagged, the email chided. If Google identifies the flags consistently, and if the content is not fixed, then the ads will be disabled completely to serve on the site. Smith called the claims from Google capricious, arbitrary, and demonstrably false, noting a blog post linked in the email, quote, has nothing whatsoever to do with health or healthcare policy. That creates the appearance that Google regards anti-vax as a showstopper and is for some reason desperately applying it to this site, which is not vaccine hostile. Google had blatantly mislabeled unrelated content to try to make that bogus charge. And that's very similar to what I mentioned YouTube just did to my content in 2018 and 2019 and taking down SoundMind's YouTubes for all this stuff. Again, I suggested to you, we're not talking about the medical side. We're talking about the law. Clearly, YouTube doesn't agree with the law, and they won't. They can't, and so they just do this, and so we read how now we're being, our content is going to be a hit, and they hit you monetarily. Again, we got back to the finances, if you will. They hit it right at the monetization because they know this place takes that to keep it going. The apparent act of intimidation is one of many faced by independent online journalists in recent years, as websites such as The Gray Zone that critique U.S. foreign policy are often denied the ability to raise and solicit donations through online services. In the case of The Gray Zone, a GoFundMe campaign that raised tens of thousands of dollars were arbitrarily shut down when the automated mail cryptically claiming the measure had been taken due to some external concerns. Quote, Elon Musk is performing a service for the security state, not just on Twitter, but in every other company he owns, said Poikkanen, on the tech magnate who contracts services to the United States government via SpaceX and other companies. Wilmer Leon, noted that the Amazon and Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos is also a major government contractor collecting billions of dollars to offer web hosting services for the Central Intelligence Agency and the government organization and other government organizations. Bezos expanded his influence several years ago when he bought Twitch, an online streaming platform popular with younger audiences. Twitch has generated controversy for periodically suspending popular streamers like Hassan Piker over alleged offensive content. Quote, I think it's incredibly optimistic, if not Pollyannish, to think that those individuals can operate outside of the interest of those that are paying their mortgages, said Leon. And we also have experienced an incredible steady decline in free speech on these social platforms that people got used to thinking were the proverbial electronic town square. In fact, with all these incestuous military contracts, and that these are the same platforms which were cut off, or that cut off service to blame the Houthi, is not unreasonable to believe that the internet kill switch is alive, well, and functioning with the full consent of the Zio Media military censorship complex participants. It's certainly not, as we can read, and we move on through this week, how the Pentagon learned to use and target ads to find its targets. So we can shut down the internet as a military. We can shut down the internet, and we can blame somebody. Well, we can go ahead and use these ads inside the system, the commerce system, to advance our agenda to hunt people down. How the Pentagon learned to use targeted ads to find its targets, and Vladimir Putin. Meet the guy who taught U.S. intelligence agencies how to make the most of an ad tech ecosystem, the largest information gathering enterprise ever received by man. So understand the censorship and then the tracking ability as we read this. It's very an astonishing story, actually, if you hadn't heard about some of this stuff, and I'm going to read a bit of it. Can't read all of it. It's a very long piece of information that I think people need to read. We'll start here. In 2019, the government contractor and technologist named Mike Yeagley began making the rounds in Washington, D.C. He had a blunt warning for anyone in the country's national security establishment who would listen. The U.S. government had a grinder problem. The popular dating and hook-up app, Grindr, relied on the GPS capabilities of modern smartphones to connect potentially partners in the same city, neighborhood, or even building. The app can show how far away a potential partner is in real time, down to the foot. Working with Grindr data, Yeagley began drawing geofences, creating virtual boundaries and geographical data sets around buildings belonging to government agencies that do national security work. That allowed Yeagley to see what phones were in the certain buildings at certain times and where they went afterwards. As Yeagley showed, all that information was available for sale for cheap. And it wasn't just Grindr, but rather any app that had access to the user's precise location. Other dating apps, weather apps, games. Listen, folks, the weather app comes with every phone I've ever seen, and they want you to push that button. Everyone who possesses an iPhone or Android phone has been given an anonymized advertising ID by Apple or Google. The number is used to track our real-world movement, our internet browsing behavior, and apps we put on our phone, and much more. Billions of dollars have been poured into this system by America's largest corporations. Faced with commercially available repository of data this rich and detailed, this world's governments have increasingly opened up their wallets to buy up this information for everyone rather than hacking it or getting it through secret court orders. Here's how it works. Imagine a woman named Marcella. She has a Google Pixel phone with a Weather Channel app installed. As she heads out the door to go on a jog, she sees overcast skies, so Marcella opens the app to check if the forecast calls for rain. By clicking on the Weather Channel's blue icon, Marcella triggers a frenzy of digital activity aimed at serving her personalized ad. It begins with an entity called the Advertising Exchange, basically a massive marketplace where billions of mobile devices and computers notify centralized server whenever they have an open ad space. In less than a blink of an eye, the Weather Channel app shares a ream of data with this ad exchange, including the IP address of Marcella's phone, the version of the Android it's running, her carrier, plus an array of technical data about how the phone is configured, down to what resolution the screen is set to, and most valuable of all, the app shares the precise GPS coordinates of Marcella's phone and the pseudonymized advertising ID number that Google has assigned to her, called the AAID. Apple devices, it's called IDFA. IDF, interesting. Yes, and it goes there too. Advertising advertisers use that information as they shape and deploy their ads. Say both Nike and Brooks, another running shoe brand, are trying to reach female running aficionados in a certain income bracket or in a certain zip codes. Geolocation is the single most valuable piece of commercial data to come off these devices. Understanding the movement of the phones is now a multi-billion dollar industry. It can be used to deliver targeted advertisement based on location for, say, a restaurant chain that wants to deliver targeted ads to people nearby. But this kind of data is good for something else. It has remarkable surveillance potential. Why? Because what we do in the world with our devices cannot be anonymized. The fact that advertisers know Marcella as AAID BCA 712 JFB 3C 33 AD 232 0794 D 394 M 912, as they're watching her move around the online and offline worlds, offers her almost no privacy protection. Taken together, her habits and routines are unique to her. Our real-world movement is highly specific and personal to all of us. Yeagley was hired after Place IQ got an investment from the CIA's venture capital arm InQtel, just as it had poured money into numerous social media monitoring services. Geospatial data had also attracted InQtel's interest. The CIA was interested in software that could analyze and understand the geographic movement of people and things. It wanted to be able to decipher when, say, two people were trying to conceal that they were traveling together. The CIA had planned to use the software with its own proprietary data But the government agencies of all kinds eventually became interested in the kind of raw data that commercial entities like PlaceIQ had. It was available through a straightforward commercial transaction and came with few restrictions on the use inside government, with then secret intercepts. When it came time to produce a demo of Planet Risk's commercial phone tracking product, Eagley's 10-year-old daughter helped him come up with a name. They called it the program Locomotive, a portmanteau of location and motive. The cost of the build out the small demo was about $600,000, but put up entirely by a couple of Pentagon research funding arms. As the Planet Risk team put Locomotive through the paces and dug into the data, they found one interesting story after another. They realized that they could track world leaders through Locomotive, too. After acquiring a data set on Russia, the team realized they could track phones in the Russian President Vladimir Putin's entourage. The phones moved everywhere that Putin did. They concluded the devices in question did not actually belong to Putin himself. Russia, state security, and counterintelligence were better than that. Instead, they believed the devices belonged to the drivers and security personnel, the political aides, and other support staff around the Russian president. Those people's phones were trackable in the advertising data. As a result, Planet Risk knew where Putin was going and who was in his entourage. Locomotive was renamed VISR, which stood for Virtual Intelligence Surveillance and Reconnaissance. It was used as part of an interagency program that would be shared widely inside the U.S. intelligence community as a tool to generate leads. But VISR, by now, is only one product among others that sell ad tech data to intelligence agencies. The Department of Homeland Security has been a particularly enthusiastic adopter of this kind of data. Other governments, intelligence agencies, have access to this data as well. Several Israeli companies, Insinet, Patterns, and Rayzone, have built similar tools to VISR and sell it to national security and public safety entities around the world, according to the reports. Rayzone has even developed the capability to deliver malware through targeted ads, according to Haaretz. Which is to say, none of this is an abstract concern, even if you're just a private citizen. I'm here to tell you, if you've ever been on a dating app that wanted your location, or if you ever granted weather app permission to know where you are 24/7, there's a good chance of detailed log of your precise movements, patterns have been vacuumed up and saved in the data bank somewhere that tens of thousands of total strangers have access to. That includes intelligence agencies. It includes foreign governments. It includes private investigators. It includes nosy journalists. In 2021, a small conservative Catholic blog named The Pillar reported that Jeffrey Burrill, the Secretary General of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, was a regular user of Grindr. Publication reported that Burrill's visited gay bars and private residences while using a location-based hookup app and described its source as commercially available records of app signal data obtained by Pillar. If you cheated on your wife in the past few years and you are careless about your location data setting, there's a good chance there's evidence of the data that is available for purchase. If you checked yourself into an inpatient drug rehab, that data is probably sitting in a data bank somewhere. If you told your boss you took a sick day and interviewed at a rival company, that could be in there too. If you threw a brick through the storefront window during the George Floyd protest, well, your cell phone might link you to the bit of vandalism. And if you once had a few pints before causing a car crash and drove off without calling the police, data telling that story likely exists somewhere. We all have vague sense that our cell phone carriers have this data about us, but law enforcement generally needs to get a court order to get that. And it takes evidence of crime to get such an order. This is a different kind of privacy nightmare. Your digital tattletale is already watching you, folks. The door to the digital gulag cell phone is almost completely closed because everybody wears the tracking bracelet near their wrist. Siberian gulag Siberian Stalag, Siberian Panopticon, Siberian Concentration Camp. Take your pick. I've been warning about this forever, it seems. And here we are. Now, why Google pick away, don't be evil. Google gets in the way, its way, bakes a user tracking ad platform directly into Chrome. Chrome now directly tracks users, generates a topic list it shares with advertisers. Enough said. Moving into the plan of the digital gulag warden corralling the herd, I ran across this from Cabana Boy on Twitter. Step one, buy Twitter. Step two, introduce verification. Step three, get rid of user-generated likes and reposts. Step four, let algorithm determine engagement via views. Step five, slowly segregate anons from verified users. Step six, force verification. Step seven, anons fully quarantined. Goal is to fully quarantine segregate the anons from verified users. This will allow pesky noticing posts and racist content to be quickly identified, filtered, and deboosted by algorithm from reaching the protected verified user class. This will reinforce self-censorship as verified users know what they say is tracked by Israeli intelligence officials who have your name, address, and face. Controversial speech will be segregated and deboosted and contained within an anon bubble. So all of us anons who refuse to verify will eventually be on a little island speaking to each other, but none of what we say is being heard by the verified users. Elon's final goal is the Everything app, the American equivalent to Chinese WeChat, only for verified users. And this is nothing that you haven't already heard behind the woodshed. As we here see, the intra-drag net is being cast. But we can go right to Kanukistan quick to see that. Pre-crime, Canada's justice minister defends online bill's power to place people under arrest and cut their internet access as part of Kanukistan's new online censorship law. Fascinating, isn't it? Justice Minister and Attorney General Arif Virani is currently defending a bizarre provision contained in the country's online harm C-63 bill that allows authorities to place people under house arrest out of, quote, fear that they could, at some point in the future, commit a hate crime. Alternatively, citizens signaled out in this way will be made to wear a tracking device, an electronic tag. Well, they already got their phone, but they're going to cut them off the internet. Kind of interesting. I don't think they've been thinking this through very clearly, but this is serious stuff. Let's keep moving. In Canada, according to the criminal code, a peace bond is issued, quote, when a person appears likely to commit a criminal offense, but there are no reasonable grounds to believe that an offense has actually been committed. Virani explained that such a peace bond could impose restrictions on people approaching a synagogue or a mosque, presumably also a church, for their use of the internet, but also somehow behavior could be restricted, he continued. C-63 also seeks to introduce the life sentence for those who commit hate crime offense along with another type of crime. Did you hear that? Life sentence that they determine on a word that's not definable, on a crime that's not yet done. Such is the messaging and the climate created by this type of legislation that the Canadian press finds it necessary to reassure people while reporting about C-63's life imprisonment provision that it will not apply in cases of mischief to a garage door. Well, that's okay. That's the only thing, I suppose. But if it did, one might be amazed at this point in time, but hardly surprised. As we move into these ideas, it's not okay to infect society with your thoughts, but quite fine for the government to develop bioweapons to kill you for you, but not for me. As we read, caught on camera, Poilievre reveals documents Trudeau has been covering up. Quote, we just received to these documents that Trudeau has been covering up. Quote, a massive security breach at Trudeau's government's most sensitive laboratory, where the most dangerous viruses and pathogens are studied and handled. Trudeau's government head of pathogens was collaborating with members of Beijing's People Liberation Army. And that's a video you can watch and you can listen to him say that. But I was wondering, what is Kazakhstan planning with bioweapons anyway? And for those of you who have been hanging in, you've got in the new hour, BTW, this is a BTW RLM567. You can't go wrong when you get behind a woodshed at all, because we're moving this thing along here to try and tie what's going on in this world and how the gates are closed, the cell phones are tightening up and making nowhere to go. And until people quite get that, instead of Trump, 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 people start getting what's going on instead of thinking they live in a free America or have lived in a free America, or it actually really changed in the last 30 years. We have some serious things to be reconsidering moving through this. What do you do when you are losing cyberspace superiority on the other hand of this? You have all the control and you claim you have superiority, but what happens when you start losing it? Well, you blow stuff up, I suppose. This sounds to me, this next story, like the Nord Stream pipeline sabotage, but we'll call this one Net Stream 1, 2, 3, and Net Stream 4. Whom benefits from blaming the Houthis? The Zionistas, correct? And they're Zio-media. World hit by internet outages. Yemen-based Houthi militants have cut underwater cables in the Red Sea, several media outlets have claimed. Popular internet platforms owned by Meta, including Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, experienced global disruption lasting over 2 hours on Tuesday. Google services were affected to a lesser extent, with reports claiming that the outages may have been caused by Houthi militants severing Red Sea cables. Several Asian-based telecom operators warned as early as last week that 4 underwater internet cables had been severed in the Red Sea. Now, that is some internet latency right there, folks. It took a week for the outage to finally be felt once they got cut. Really? You believe all this stuff? But good to know, though, that when someone pulls that plug, we'll have about a week to prepare based on this notice. But Meta spokesman Andy Stone said the company was aware people are having trouble accessing our services. In a subsequent message, he put the disruptions down as a technical issue without providing further details. Now, why no details? Was the lines cut or hacked? Evidence of the global internet kill switch here? Yeah, you lose the superiority, so you blame it on somebody. You actually are actually controlling it right there as well, right? HGC Communications released its first public statement on the incident last Thursday, describing it as an exceptionally rare occurrence. Just like those jabs, right? Just like the side effects of those jabs, those consequences. Yeah, exceptionally rare that had caused a significant impact on communication networks in the Middle East. Just the Middle East? But the title on this article says the world was affected. Now it's just the Middle East, where the Houthis needed, I suppose, as well. They would cut their own throat. Russia did it, right? Yemen's Houthi-controlled telecom ministry issued a statement denying reports by the Zionist League media outlets that the armed group was responsible for damage to the cables. The Houthis are keen to keep all submarine telecom cables away from any possible risk, the statement added. So, who benefits from the fact, or the allegation is right there, the Zionist linked media, or those supporting the Palestinian genocide that the Houthi have vowed to stop? The U.S. military made the internet redundant so it would always have a path through, or apparently not at all, if it chooses, it seems. Who sabotaged the digital pipelines? Whom professes full spectrum dominance? Multi-domain operations, national security doctrine, and cyberspace and psychological control, but the United States military. Whose is it a sacred duty to protect the Zionists, as explained by Secretary of State Antony Blinken? Remember, never forget. is this digital gulag future you, the one you actually want when your whole life can be cut off, stuck in your cell, stuck in your cell phone? Cui bono, folks? Who benefits from the lines being cut or kill switched off and blaming the Houthi? And if they did cut the full spectrum dominance because more full spectrum egg, it puts more full spectrum egg on the face of the U.S. military by its own propagandizing blovations here to the American public to support an incapable military industrial complex fraud. Right, Mr. Abrams? Burn up like no other tank, right? What are we setting ourselves up for in this world? Well, I just think about the soldiers, where they're going, what's being set up against our people, our young ones. To the last Ukrainian, then it goes down into the Middle East, the last American, wherever, any of them. And I noticed an insightful post here, a telegram regarding, on the telegram channels there, the state of the world that I'll read in part. You can get the link to read the rest. It was written from Tiberius on X. He writes this: the old world is no longer dying. It is dead. In spite of the increased severity, Palestinians have known these terrors for longer than I've existed. It's what this horror means as well. It means that any single tyrant can murder any of us at will with our entire families, neighborhoods, and communities, and the world leaders will not act to stop them. It means the savages in suits can kill us all with advanced drones, and we can share the corpses of our children with billions of people, and the media will excuse it, scapegoat our kin, and divert attention away from any means necessary. It means the legal apparatus set up in the wake of the Holocaust to prevent another Holocaust from occurring is meaningless, because the very nations who ratified it in law will ignore its clear imperatives and even subvert and attack those who try to enforce it. In this moment, Israel's actions have cost the entire world more than anyone can quantify, and the depraved and twisted Western coalition that has supported the Israeli regime has ensured that cost is deep and that we will all must bear it. This, I believe, is the great battle of our time, and it's not going away. The old world is dead, that's for sure, and the monsters are fully in control. The question is, what can we do about it? And what can we do about Satan, Yehu, Zionist annihilation pogrom? So what kind of world has apparently died? Clearly, those who kill Arabs and Jews are not Muslim. Read this little story, kind of neat. I always like these ancient finding instrument type stories, neat to read about. Extraordinary. Ancient device reveals the bond between religion and science. How was this world that died? What was it before? The discovery of a device over 1,000 years old tells a story of mutual knowledge, creation, development, and sharing by Christians, Jews, and Muslims in 11th century Spain. What an historic scientific device this ends up being. The astrolabe, crafted in Andalusia, passed through the hands of Muslim, Jews, and Christians over 10 centuries. Its engravings, initially in Arabic and later in Hebrew, narrate a story of knowledge and creation, development, and exchange among scholars residing in Andalus and a then Muslim-ruled region of Spain. Star positions found on instrument aligned with those of astrolabes from 1060s to the 1070s. Quote, we know that in 11th century Spain, Jews, Muslims, and Christians were working alongside each other, especially in the scientific media, and that many Jewish scientists were sponsored and patronized by Muslim rulers with no concern for their religion. It's not that this instrument tells us this for the first time. All this is known, but what I find extraordinary is that it is very tangible, physical proof of that history, she remarked. So Muslims making and using an astrolabe doesn't seem to be like animals, folks. Right, we have to have a bit more going on. So what was the Zionist Federation movement made but trouble here as we look at what they're doing? death and destruction. Remember, the Zionist Federation is a political movement. It's not a religion. They're utilizing the religions and good people, maybe clueless good people, as cover for their genocidal needs. As I've said, those who wantedly kill Arabs and Jews in Palestine today are not Muslims. And with all that camaraderie of faith in the past, I found this next story, all this stuff comes and comes together, just interesting. I found this next story really very, well, it's telling of the hypocrisy. Greek Orthodox Holy Synod calls for action against anti-Semitism. We have to put, again, a little bit of our thinking caps on. Greek Orthodox Holy Synod calls for action against anti-Semitism. I just said the Jews and the Zionists are different. One's a political movement, and one is a religious faith. We've also said, and we can prove, because of the definition of what Semites are, the Semitic peoples are, Palestinians are Semitic. So what is the Zionist doing to the Palestinians in Palestine? The Greek Orthodox professes to be against anti-Semitism. And I've said this for a long time. I think the actual definition has been contorted by the Zionist Federation, and I don't think people really understand what they're talking about. But I've tried to keep that straight here behind the woodshed. A memorandum of cooperation to fight anti-Semitism signed between the Greek Orthodox churches of Greece and Cyprus and leading Jewish organizations in Greece was presented at the Greek Church's Holy Synod on Tuesday that was chaired by Archbishop Hieronymus of Athens and all Greece. So, bearing in mind the historically favorable interrelations tangibly evidenced in the Arab Astrolabe article, the first act of the Greek Orthodox churches of Greece and Cyprus to counter anti-Semitism was to rush to support the Semitic Palestinians and condemn the deceptive Zionist Federation movement operating under color of the clueless Bovidnio Jews and call for the Zionists to be cast on the fiery rock outcropping in the South China Sea. Right? Did it do that? Did it run to support the Palestinians? No. These folks are hypocrites, folks. Bovidnal. Is that a word? Bovidnal. Bovine? It doesn't matter. Christian hypocrites are good. Allowing ethnic cleansing, cohorts in war crimes, not peace. I hear recently someone now, the Defamation League, past Defamation League founder, saying we have to fear Jews. I don't understand. Why do we fear? But we're not supposed to fear, is what we're told. None of my Jewish friends, even those that I studied with, ever required that I fear them. And we got along great. We got along like the use of the astrolabe, science, come together. Not like what we're being promoted to today by people who are literally warmongers. No moral bone in them. And here's where the long-term thinking is working towards in the New World Order. But the politics for the global financial transformation is slow to respond, and we'll read here. You can watch how this works out. You can look back in America. As I've told you, these laws are in the books, and it takes a time for them to come out. It takes a time to get the laws in, and then it takes a time for them to work their way out. So we can read about this next interview. What needs to happen, what is in the way, and read for the terminological clues that no matter how it's connected, the digital gulag ID is the only outcome that they're planning for. The purported distinct paths taken are irrelevant here, as I've been explaining. You've got to look through what's going on. We're looking at outcomes. Very interesting story. I would call this some information, an interview from one of the gurus. But you have to read between the lines a bit and see the language that he's using to start to explain what's going on. Rocky Road to De-Dollarization, Sergei Glazyev interview. Very few people in Russia and across global South are as qualified as Sergei Glazyev member of the Russian Academy of Sciences, who also serves as Commissioner for Integration and Macroeconomics at the Eurasian Economic Union, to speak about the drive, the challenges, and the pitfalls in the road towards de-dollarization. Ideas are being examined, re-examined, and there's a huge expectation for the green light from Russian government for a new trade settlement model, which for the moment is in the final stages of fine-tuning. Glazyev explained how this main idea was elaborated a long time ago, the basic idea that a new currency should be first of all introduced on the basis of international law, signed by the countries which are interested in the production of this new currency, is not via some kind of conference like Bretton Woods with no legitimacy. Boy, read a ton into that statement right there. All that leads to adopting a new international currency, quote, we don't really need to go large scale. BRICS is enough. The idea of the currency is that there are two baskets. One basket is national currency of all countries involved in the process, like the SDR, but with more clear, understandable criteria. The second basket are commodities. You really got to listen to what this guy's saying and then apply what I've been saying about the commingling, and we'll talk a little bit about that here, the future and the need to commingle production with commerce. Remember, the United States Congress that leads all this in the United States, that's what it regulates, is commerce. If you have, it says, if you have two baskets, we create the new currency as an index of commodities and national currencies. So listen carefully there. You're not talking about a currency. You're talking about an index of currencies based on those values. And we have a mechanism for reserves according to the mathematical model that will be very stable. Stable and convenient, he says. So notice he correctly identifies production must be in its own basket. But notice there he commingled already with the exchange-driven commerce in the word commodity. Even so, stabilizes the fiat currency. In other words, the production backs the currency, the fiat. So analyze this for it. This is being fairly correct in how they want to apply it. But listen for the other attachments, the other millstones as we go reading through this. Then it's up to feasibility. To introduce this currency as an instrument for transactions would not be too difficult, with good infrastructure and all central banks approving, then it's up to businesses to use this currency. It should be in digital form, which means it can be used without the banking system, so it will be at least 10 times cheaper than present transactions through banks and currency exchanges. So if you listen to the words here, notice all the sustainability CBDC talking points in the system. Convenient, easy, efficient, cheap, and importantly, the need of the central bank approval. Who are these banks? If not governmental instrumentalities, who are these banks? Don't you think that's interesting? Need their approval. See, it's not your system, folks. It's just nothing about it that's ours. Notice the centralization that's also required, notwithstanding them talking about digital currency, which Bitcoin promoted as decentralized. It's not. There's going to be a centralizing point somewhere. And in particular, the exchanges, and now equate that over to the United States, the SEC and I think the Commerce Department wants to put cryptocurrency into exchanges. It's the commerce part. So it goes on here in this article you can read, and there's a whole lot more. You really need to read through this and think about this. This is setting up what they're trying to do to, again, bring parity to the global south. You'll notice that it's also going to the sustainable future they want. It goes on to say, you need someone who's responsible on the front end of this. In BRICS, there is such an organization, the NDB, the New Development Bank. And recently I've talked about all this and pointed out all these things, but now we're getting it from what I would say is the guru, the guy who Russia is giving the forward planning, the forward presentation to the politicians to make it so in the future as they run through this. If the heads of state decide to appoint the NDB as an institution which will elaborate the new model, the new currency, organize an international conference with a draft of an international treaty, this can work. So we're talking contracts again, but this is, remember, international. They're separate than what you'll be getting. So also notice on the problem that producers who, in this article, who like to deal directly with the purchaser don't like to be included in these exchanges, which are in commerce because production direct to whomever needs it is what the producer sells to. He goes on to say and identify, the main problem is that the major producers of the commodities, first of all, the oil companies, they don't like to trade through exchanges. They like to trade personally. So you need a political decision to make sure that at least half of production of commodities should go through exchanges. As I've been explaining, notice one of the reasons that the governments and they want to sustainably bring production into commerce is for the taxation and regulation. But water and oil here, this is an analogy, water and oil don't really mix, as it were. And they just make a mess when one tries to do that. But we can read that purpose later on where he says in this article, for the moment, the price of oil in foreign markets is secret. It's some type of colonial times thinking, how to cheat. We must create legislation to open all this information to the public. Well, public means government. So, which presumes the Soviet, if you think about how this works. We're not talking Russia. I'm talking about the Soviet, what the Soviet government governance was. And that's with these sustainability things. It's the new Soviet. When you read that, you have to presume the Soviet is at work and no one has property and will like it. And anyone granting property to another is presumed to be a cheater. This is like the money laundering excuse they do in the United States. Well, all these countries do are relative to Bitcoin or other digital currencies. And so read for that when you see this is a Soviet imposition. The government will control private property. Hard to see it in Russia. Much easier to see it in America where the product is the property. And so we also hear from this sustainability guru for the central control and obligations to extortion of every kind and to no other is already enjoyed by compliant human capital Americans pursuant to 42 U.S.C. 1981, such as taxes here. That's what they're focused on. Nevertheless, you're a cheater if you're not in part of the system. What'd they just say? If you don't have a phone, you do have a phone, you're going to be a criminal. So they make it up as they go, and they make it so that you're locked down and locked in. It says, nevertheless, here you'll read and see, even in an open market, quite competitive, which have intermediates between producer and consumer, at least half of the revenues are stolen from government control. They don't pay taxes. So you see here the reference to the intermediates when he goes to that. That's the real problem. That's the commerce interest, not production. And as I've explained, the truth be known, commingling production with commerce is that it's a takings here that cannot be compensated for, at least in America, because of the imposition here in America was a breach of the land disposal law of the grantor and the obligations of the grantor, which is Congress. So when you get back to the beginning of the broadcast, and you're listening to what they did, the Supreme Court recognized what happened to Lincolnization. And I said, but Congress is subject to its own constitutional laws, and land disposal is constitutional. It's subject to that. I've just qualified that again here. It's all consistent going through. And that enjoyment of that, those disposals, land disposals, and the use, such as for gold, or is production, is private property. That's the power of gold. It's not actually a commodity. It's a private property. So here, the usurpation against farming in the governmental sustainability head fake news, something called food to fork, I've explained a bit. This gets it to the fork they need to put it on a truck, and that truck is in the flow of commerce. And that's what they're attempting to do when you look at food to fork concepting, attempting to commingle production with distribution to the fork, like the exchanges and intermediaries. And they should be absolutely separated. They should have been all the time. And so there's a lot to discuss behind that. I've discussed lots of this. I'm seeing it here in this discussion from someone in Russia. Now, I don't know what their real land laws are, and a lot of times the government owns this stuff. But we can see for us in America, and if there is, even in other places, like under the crown, the ceding of power to the land and the land owner, then this discussion here applies, and you watch how the future that they want, they need to take your property as a commerce item to be regulated, so it's not property, it's a privilege. So we read on here, or we interpret here, commerce adulteration is why production needs to be arrogantly separate. If you remember what Putin was saying, we can't be arrogant. No, arrogantly separate. And also why, for instance, a gold and silver monetary system won't mix with a fiat or an index of settlement system, as we hear this guru wants to have us understand is coming. This interview here just explains that integration difficulty, even if not impossibility. And the need for that second basket is critical to see. If you didn't pay attention to that or didn't understand, again, after studies for over a decade here, and then working this through with my colleagues and things, finding the beginning of the patent and the evidence that is, and the disposal being exclusive, and even against the government itself, there's a powerful thing to notice. And then you apply it. You just don't know that. You apply it, and it starts to bring all this out of these notices we get relative to the media. And we can look through even when it's a government media, like RT or Sputnik or NPR or MSN or whoever. We could see right through that. And I would ask people to start getting the knowledge they need so they can do that. It's not, it's a steep learning curve if you want to go quickly. Time is of the essence as well. We're not getting any younger. But we also need to know quickly so that it's not that hard to see through this very quickly. It takes so much longer to explain it. Then you're reading through and you're watching the statement. You're just watching, like I've told you before, I read, it's almost like I have two movies running in my mind, my mind's eye. Got the one they're trying to tell us, but I also got the one that they're actually explaining. Applying that knowledge to some place. So we look in here, the notice that the government likens the government to a religion. And to counter the focus on sustainable innovation, they always think making innovation sustainably. And despite he's an adherent of the green religion under a different name and methods, such as working groups or task force, as you'll read in this story. So he will say the government's religion and he'll deny that what he's doing is in one, but he's in a green religion, the sustainability religion. And economics, as I told you, Agenda 2030 ultimately is a debt-driven servitude. They call it prosperity because you're sharing the obligations to the priestess or the messiah of theirs, Gaia, whoever, which is totally unnatural anyway. But anyway, going on to this day here. And I've discussed all these things around working in a state near you, working group, task groups. We have advisory councils and commissions all in the United States. All this stuff is already in the United States. It's been working all this time. And so this is not separate. People think I'm talking about Russia, this guy. No, I'm talking about it's a global lockdown already. It's already in your law. And we can read, religious sects don't create innovation in this article as a heading. Religious sects don't create innovation. He's a sustainability sect, green religion sect, who they claim does create innovation, solutions, all these things. On BRICS, quote, the Financial Services Working Group is discussing reinsurance, credit rating, new currencies in fintech. The problem, once again, is there's no task force yet. If you look in the United States, you'll see those set up really quick. The governors love to set up task force. That's almost a clear sign you're dealing in a sustainability destruction coming. I don't care what they end up doing, they're going to make a task force to make it work. They become an advisory council. Those advisory councils are federal. under federal law. That has a definition in federal law. Federal law rules. You think you're a state, you have independence, non-dependent? No. No, we're federal. We're Lincolnized. It's right here in the news, Russia and the BRICS and the South is in the United States already working. So as I told you, they're bringing parity to all this. They got to bring those folks along. The international financial architecture that was created by the United States and Europe is convenient. Everyone knows how to work in the system. So it's impossible to move from this system to another system. For businesses, it will be very difficult. For banks, it will be difficult. People have been educated in the paradigm of financial equilibrium, totally libertarian. Well, they need a task force to figure out how to work this thing through. But the system is pretty status quo and set. Why? Because it's not anybody's. It's some private interest, and they're watching out for themselves. This article goes on, the guru goes on to say, they don't care that the prices are manipulated by speculators. That's all of us. They don't care about volatility of national currencies. They think it's natural. It's kind of a religious sect. Religious sects don't create innovation. And the green religious sect claims to do innovation, but it's to your destruction, to innovate the infrastructure to your destruction. So they aren't these political types now. This system, the global system, is not moving there because the international system isn't interested in the actual decentralized system, but one with two regulable parts that appear different, but operate ultimately as a uniparty, as we see the model. This is, and again, this is a much larger, longer article that I can't possibly cover all the material here, but it's insightful if you read it. As I say, don't read absently. Read and apply. I suggest reading this article if one is interested in reading what it's taking to transform the global system and how it's actually happening. And you're watching that. That's the interesting, neat thing. Even if what appears to be happening is at a snail's pace. But remember, incrementalism has to move under the radar about this whole condition. And we would expect it to be moving imperceptibly slow in its progress as well. So this is an important article. Just tons of info to confirm most of what I've been told you here behind the woodshed relative to this fiscal and monetary shucking and driving that's going on and keeping people distracted while they are imprisoned, while they watch and do nothing globally. And this is all over the world. It's just fascinating. I don't know. Can't get past that. How these folks are able to run this around everyone. And very few listen behind the woodshed, let alone learn what they're missing to even focus on their own life to protect themselves and then watch and understand. You might be able to protect yourself, but see, when they're cutting out the herd, they cut the herd, those of us out of the herd, then we're going to be easy to be found. So it's going to take, it's not just, oh, we know so much, arrogantly believing we know so much. No, there's no one's left behind. And if there's not enough people that are going to be cutting themselves from the herd and making alternatives, it's just a matter of time, essentially, to the organized plan. Like Benjamin Franklin, I said earlier in the broadcast, if you don't have a plan, you plan to fail. It's a truism. It's a truism. Now, you may plan and still have it fail, but without a plan, whim and caprice comes right up in your face. And so slow as a snail's pace and slow to move, politics is starting to respond in the cyberspace, though, relative to this BRICS, as the politicians have a balancing act to do with their people. And this is no different than a usurpation and occupying the power. They've got to get their people slowly turned and transformed by all this. Again, that last article is a ton of sustainability stuff. They don't mention any of it. You just got to know the terms. And you can watch, you can build the picture of what they're actually talking about. You can watch the future being developed. And they'll get it if there's no response. They slowly get it done because everybody doesn't know they're a frog in a pot of boiling water that's being brought to a boil. Or they're a crab in a bucket. They don't realize that. It's, you know, Trump. Whatever they believe it makes them feel good in their perception. And that's what we like. I'm not saying I don't like it. That's what we like to rest in, where it's nice and peaceful. It should be. But this is not a peaceful world, as you heard. It's coming, oh, we got to have, Jews should be feared. No. That's Zionism. They not only shouldn't be feared, they should be shut down. We don't need We need peace. We don't need fear. Fear, intimidation, and bread. And dread. Fear, intimidation, and dread is the definition of terrorism. Applied to a government, that is the terrorism by government. It's tyranny. That's what these guys are talking about. We should fear people, fear things. No, we shall not fear. But BRICS, moving this in along as we were going through from the guru explaining where they want to get Russia to go. BRICS to create blockchain-based payment system, Putin aide said. So this gentleman had been working behind the scenes for decades, said we got to go digital. Putin's looking at that right now. And I told you this was going to move pretty fast as we were watching all the denials. Quote, we believe that an important goal for the future is the creation within the BRICS framework of an independent settlement payment system that would be based on the most modern technologies such as digital currencies and blockchain, Ushakov stated. It would be comfortable for any state, person, and business and would not require significant costs. You hear the theme. It's easy, convenient, cheap, right? Over and over. So comfortable and convenient, folks. And less expensive, folks. This is how they breathe. You know, this is what they put us under. All these talking points as the West imposes its global digital gulag as well. And did you catch it without fiat currency? That's interesting, don't you think? They don't talk anything about that part. So because they throw a few grains of gold here in that SDR basket, a few grains of gold into that basket of fiat currency, it becomes real. If you look at what they're saying here, they suggest that if they put some grains of gold at the bottom of the basket of their national fiat currencies, it's going to make it all right. Does it? See, it doesn't matter once it goes onto the SDR, a special drawing right, or blockchain, by any name they put on it, such as being done here. For the alternative BRICS New Development Bank, since 2015, folks, this has already been in the works. It's not just happening since the Ukraine thing, since the sanctions. This is an implementation that's been going on for decades. And they call this thing something else, the alternative to the SDR. It has the same components. And they're trying to the guru is trying to say, no, you got to legitimize it better. Put all, they call commodities, put all product, all the production into this. But they have to throw it into the exchange. They say at least half. And they have to be doing that to force you. That's a taking in the United States. So will this the alternative they're making be any different than the West's global financial system going on, moving itself into blockchain and a global servitude by it? Clearly, no, because where they claim in this that the CRA is generally seen as a competitor to the International Monetary Fund, it's not a competitor to the existing, long-existing, overarching global financial system of which the IMF is a part of. And we can see that where he says, it says here in the article, the International Monetary Fund, IMF, and along with the New Development Bank, is viewed as an example of increasing South-South cooperation. So, as I've said before, months ago, moving this through, trying to prepare us as I saw it coming, there is no actual separation that we hear they're talking about. That's the psyop for people. Russia, and I said, Russia is leading us into the future that they want. We can read, Russia currently holds the rotating chairmanship of the group, and Moscow has repeatedly stressed that its priority is to increase payments in national currencies within the bloc. That's the fiat. Quote, we will continue to work on the development of the contingent reserve arrangement, primarily in terms of the use of currencies alternative to the U.S. dollar, Ushakov stated. It doesn't matter what name they put on them. That's the basket of currencies backing the SDR in the same way the plan decades ago of that's called the CRA today. This was all done to bring lesser economies into parity with the global financial system, now itself admitted to be going digital and blockchained your servitude. The BRIC system will not be separate from the global financial B system that we've been heard about, if anybody's been paying attention. Ushakov noted that BRICS intends to focus in 2024 on increasing its role in the international monetary and financial systems. Just as you've been told behind the woodshed. And you thought currency, fiat currency was bad, folks. And to be fair, this settlement system is nation to nation, not for people. Like I said, this is an international element in the two-tiered servitude system. One tier for governments to feign their plausible sovereignty. Remember, it's all-inclusive. There's no real, they call it sovereignty, but it's not. You're subject. And the other for the human capital. I mean, capital. The human cattle. That's what they call their herd, human capital. That's the second tier. In the 90s, it was explained there would be two different $100 bills, one for international use and one domestic. So now digital removes this dirty detail, as well as the chance that the herd might see the meatpacking plant on this. And this nation-to-nation settlement system all sounds identical to the one being pitched to the human capital that they intended to extort from, the exactions of every kind, remember? Oh, wait, I misspoke. I did, didn't I? Who has been listening? No, not the World Health Organization. How did I misspeak as contrived as I just did? But I'm making a point. But what is it? When you listen back, read this article, when you have no property and like it, you can't be extorted from. Digital provides no property but obligation and a different type of inescapable debt, as we read in 2030, as we understand what digital currencies are doing. The extortion, then, is upon your obligation, the benefit of another, which can be the source of extortion against you, but without much of any due process, and decided by the captor's agent, the foreign or domestic one, as we're watching, international or domestic. And if you have no property, you can't really be extorted from. And if you have no property, you have no rights to be coerced out of it either. And due process, for the most part, is irrelevant. Even the due process required under Lincolnized and Slave America. Think this through, folks, how this is actually working. Those remaining required civil rights to enjoy extortion, seen at 42 U.S.C. 1981, are still in effect. Because if you go read that, it says contracts are recognized and enforceable under 42 U.S.C. 1981, aren't they? And you're not the author of that contract with any right of enforcement or any presumed benefit provided. That they possess that contract, benefit, property, and right, creating that obligation upon you. For instance, do you agree to there's a contract on your cell phone? Your Gulag cell phone? Did you write that contract? Who then is in power position for enforcement? Where is the property? So it would be, one is either the property of another, or have a debt and of obligation to another, or both on these future that they want. And what else can a human, the monster without inheritable blood, be but treated as an animal here? And without any more due process required than the ring in your nose will allow. And then consider on all this, any possessed condition just mentioned was likely a foreign privately owned institution at that, which is quite the oxymoron. No property except what's possessed by the they, disposable at their will. How's that for equal rights under law, under a foreign occupation? Is that the Gaza model? Those animals of the chosen now being slaughtered? Without much of any help? A boot stomping on the face of mankind forever, folks? Because no one stopped it when they had a chance? No one took the they behind the woodshed and put their mark on that beast at all? Not a whimper? Not a try? Instead, they chose to take that mark of the beast. How's that digital electronic ear tag you hold in your hand coming along? Have they got you to eat the bugs yet? Are you sure you're not? Remember the Tyson Food Insect Company acquisition? Yeah, keep chewing that cricket cud. Boy, they got us. The only answer to this tyranny is don't be a cricket, as I've been asking people. Find some wrong you need to make right and make it so. Cut yourself from the presumed herd of lemmings. This digital global gulag monetary system is not going to go away. You hear how long-term it's been planned. The entire nations of peoples will go down with their respective ship of state into the stinking abyss as everyone moves the deck chairs about. But, you know, folks, Trump, 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 Trump. Cancel culture this, cancel culture that. Will you have created an alternate passage instead of the route which marks you for destruction in this? Are you looking forward to this? That is the choice to be made and to work to further. We have good examples of what works. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. There's no time anyway. I mean, we can start there. We are admonished to get out of her, my people. Well, do it now. Now. It won't be easy. They don't make it easy, but it's necessary. You have to work with like-minded people to do so. And that's going to require that everyone elevates their understanding of what's going on. Not their opinions and how much they can tell people, but what's really going on. And for those miscreants attempting to get in your way, take a bite, don't you? Learn how. That's how we're going to have to do it. And if you still hold any doubt that inevitable future that they want is especially Soviet and Russia, at least Putin is sustainably driving there. And I think I'm going to pick this up, and I want to entice you to listen here. I told you here before that they are after your kids. And I've been showing you how Putin is running two things. He's got his Ukraine thing going, which I think they have a defense. They have a right of defending themselves on the agreements they have in the land and what with that. But then he's been running that other agenda. And you heard the guru talking about digitizing the world in Russia, bringing those people into the sustainability. China's now up promoting it. They're after your little ones, folks. Putin explains that this week. I'm going to have to leave that for later. I'm running out of time. I hope something I said today gets you thinking. Put two and two together, three and four and five together. Not common core math. Put it together, make a nice solid foundation. Make sure you're not standing on any sand. Make sure that there's nice solid thing that places to stand on with your knowledge and your knowledge of application. Hope something I said will aid you in that perspective to start understanding how to see through this nonsense. And I'll be with you next week, Tech Tips, or nature willing. This has been BTW RLM 567.
Another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
Feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.